Good evening, everybody. June 25th, 2020. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, and a lot going on, so getting right to the topics here. First of all, I'm sorry I didn't get my show posted on the webpage last week. The past number of weeks have been, well, you might just call busy. And sometimes when I get focused on things, you just have to let everything else go. I have so many things going on, so many good things, but sometimes it takes that focus, and that's what's been going on. So anyway, I hope I can be better. One time I was on a radio show with a woman, a radio show, her name was Jackie Patru, and I told her, Jackie has said, next week I think things will get back to normal. This was about 20 years ago, I think. And she said to me, Jim, life will never be normal for you. In other words, you're going to be busy all the time, and you're going to get more busy and more busy as time goes on. And I think she was right. I was having some wishful thinking there. Anyway, a quick story here about Europa. Europa is a moon of Jupiter. It's an icy moon. There's actually three icy moons around Jupiter, and the one innermost moon called Io, I-O, it's spelled I-O, pronounced Io, is a very hot moon. Just, in fact, it's the most volcanic object in the solar system. I think Venus is much more volcanic, but they don't like to talk about that. Because, anyway, not going to go into that now. But anyway, back to Europa. Europa is an icy moon, and it has a complete ice surface. In other words, it's just a round ice ball, which is a very interesting thing to note, because why isn't it a comet? It's outside of Jupiter's radiation belt. It's fully in the solar wind. It should be a comet. It should be a comet if the Dirty Snowball Comet model is correct, and of course it's not. It's just another one of the glaring contradictions that tells you that it's full of hooey. But anyway, the latest report from the standard science community is that there are oceans underneath this top layer of ice, which there may very well be. It's one of the things that's been discussed for many years, actually many decades, by various researchers, that potentially there is a water ocean under there, and good grief, what if we could get there and find, you know, dolphins or, I don't know, some kind of eel creatures or maybe something right out of a Star Wars movie, who knows? But that would be very interesting to see if there's any life there or if it's a perfectly sterile environment with nothing living there at all. But anyway, that's the latest thing. And so, yes, it'll be very interesting to imagine what kind of activity is going on there. Once again, it should be this raging comet, and if it were, then of course it should have burned out long ago, since it's supposedly 4.5 billion years old, and it's been out in that solar wind, but it doesn't form a comet. There's nothing coming off of it at all, just like all comet nuclei. There's nothing coming off the nucleus of this a massive ice ball comet. Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that at any rate. This past June 20th, I believe it was the 20th this year, where was the longest day of the year. So for all of you in the Northern Hemisphere, especially farther north, you will be sliding down the long ramp to the shortest day of the year, December 21st. And of course, I get a kick out of a friend of mine used to say, when I used to live up in the upper Midwest there, he'd say by July 4th, that's the end of summer. And in a sense, that was true, because at that point, people were going to the state fair, they were going on family vacations, There were other events going on, that family-type events. And before you knew it, the end of the summer was there, and there was Labor Day, and the kids went back to school, and, you know, everybody started concentrating on work again. And so summer was like a flash in the pan. Like, what happened to summer again? Anyway, June 20th, the longest day of the year, and of course that's due to the Earth's 23.5 degree inclination, which apparently changed many thousands of years ago, certainly within the last 10,000 years. Earth's orbit, or its rate of rotation around the sun, its orbital period, and also its rotation on its axis changed. And this is pretty much, in my book, confirmed that it would be a 360-day year, and that's from other people's studies. Those are the kind of things that I find to be a bit tenuous, and I don't rest any of my work on specific predictions like that. But one thing I did do, because this is the problem, I deal with archaeology quite a bit. Here is one of the problems. You cannot go back into time and find a calendar that gives us all the parameters of the Earth's rotation and the solar system and all the other planets. There's really no real data on this. We have some lingering, they're crop circles, basically, or, no, I'm sorry, not crop circles, they're rock circles. They're circles of stones or rocks or boulders or things like the, you know, they're all over the world, these rock monuments. Stonehenge in England, etc., is just an example. In Zimbabwe, there's a rock circle. It's a calendar that they kept, and it was dedicated to Venus. And if you look at, for example, the main city of the Mayans, the Chichen Itza, the main temple, you would think would be, oh, like dedicated to the sun, which is in the biggest pyramid up by Teotihuacan near Mexico City, a place I used to hang out quite a bit. The main pyramid is to the sun, and the smaller one is to the moon. They don't have anything really dedicated to Venus, not on a major scale anyway. But in Chichen Itza, one of the capital cities of the Maya, which is a much older civilization, much, much older. And what we call the classic period of the Maya, which was around 800 AD, that was the remnant, that was the rebirth of the civilization, which was born thousands of years earlier in that region. The civilizations go way back, same with the Incas. But the main temple at Chichen Itza is dedicated to Venus. Venus, just a little kind of a nice bright star in the sky. You know, it's about the size of a star. And it is the brightest object next to our moon, of course, but it's the brightest object along with Jupiter. And they still appear kind of like big stars. They're not, you know, they're not filling up major portions of the night sky. So why would you dedicate your central temple to Venus? Well, it's because Venus always was not Venus. It used to be a large comet, and it spent about, my estimate is about 600 years rambling through the solar system. It affected Mars, it affected Earth on two occasions as it worked its way into its current orbit. And tail drag, if you understand my plasma discharge comet model, the tail drag is what caused its orbital change to constantly move inwards and inwards and inwards until it finally settled into a circular orbit. Okay, so at any rate, when it affected Earth, when Venus came by Earth and affected it on two different occasions, the second one was very dramatic, and that is when Earth had a change in orbital parameters. It went from, this is according to other people who have done calendar studies, and I agree with this. I simply concur because it is the best study to date. and all of the people in universities, etc., that do archaeology, they don't look at this because, according to them, they have to, see, they have the top-down astronomy department rules the world and universe, which says that the planet Earth formed 4.5 billion years ago and the moon formed shortly after, and nothing has happened since. So the archaeology department should be studying calendars, but they don't, because why study calendars when nothing has changed? If you know, so that's pretty convenient. You know, you take the lead from the astronomy department, so therefore you don't have to go out in the field and dig around and find out the truth, and your answer is already given to you. So anyway, back to the rotational angle of Earth and all of the, you know, the Earth is at 23.5 degrees. Our moon is at a 6 degree, or about a 6 degree angle, its orbit relative to the ecliptic, the plane of the planets. And by the way, that's another proof that the solar system could not be 4.5 billion years old, because the moon would be very much in the orbit of plane of the planets. And the reason for that is because when something's above the plane of the planets, when it's above the plane of the planets, the bulge of the sun pulls down on it, or just the sun itself would pull down on it, and when it's down below the plane of the planets, the sun would pull up on it. So eventually it's going to work itself into the plane of the planets. And that's it. When you calculate this, it's a very fairly short period of time. So the solar system is always pulling itself into the plane of the planets, if you see what I mean. And if it's up, it pulls down. If it's down, it pulls up. Hey, it ain't rocket science. But don't wake up the NASA scientists. Don't tell those guys. They're getting their paycheck, and they don't want to be woken up. So anyway, life in the big city. But going back to the something that I realized as an archaeologist and as somebody that realizes that we do not have good records of history of the condition of the solar system. So as a result of this, I sat down and I wanted to do two things. Let me just preface this by saying that when I wrote my book Surviving Planet X Passage back in the early 2000s, in there was a method of building a calendar, not only a calendar, but a clock, using a pile of stones, and you can do this in a couple hours. It's pretty short. I mean, that's a good exercise for kids. And when I proposed this for an archaeological model, taking a pile of rocks and making a calendar and a clock, they started discovering these things all over the world. And archaeologists have been seeing these piles of rocks with, you know, basic structure, putting them out in a calendar type of layout out over a field. And in fact, that's what happened. And so the societies that survived had this skill of creating a calendar and a clock with a pile of rocks. And it's used for both sunlight clocks and for nighttime star clocks. So you can tell the date and the time from the clocks, from the stars, and from the sun, so day and night. And it also works no matter where you are on planet Earth. And so I describe this method in my book, Planet X, or Surviving Planet X Passage. Okay, so then I said to myself, self, I want to sit down and devise a product. And it's now on my webpage. I've been selling this for years. I don't even know how many I've sold. I didn't count them. Thousands and thousands of these things have sold. But it's called the Emergency Survival Recalendar Sun Star Clock, or more briefly, the Recalendar Sun Star Clock. It's like $40 on my webpage. And I think with shipping, it's like $45. Amazing low price. But what it is, it's an extremely durable aluminum sheet on a fiber backing, and then on the other side is another aluminum sheet. So it's like a ply, a very thin, maybe eighth inch thick. I think it's called Dibond is the actual name for the material, Dibond or Dibond, something like that. Anyway, but it's a commonly used for sign making in the printing industry. So anyway, I devised the calendar and clock, which you can set up in a couple minutes, and it has some pins in it that give you direction and allow you to orientate this thing correctly with respect to the sun or the stars. It also comes with a star wheel clock and calendar. And it also comes with a calendar that you can set far into the future and far into the past, thousands of years, in fact. But the point is, along with this ability to create the sun, to use the sun to create a calendar and a clock, and the stars to create a calendar and a clock and use them, and do this in a matter of minutes now. It's not like taking a pile of rocks and doing this. It's a matter of minutes. You put the pins in, you set it up. You set it up for your latitude, which takes a couple minutes, and bingo, you're done. You use the shadow of the sun, or you use the stars at night to tell the position of the Earth in its orbit, the time of year, etc. But the other thing is, on this plate is all of the data giving all of the parameters of our solar system as of a date, the shortest date of the year in 2012. And it just happened that's when I was designing this, was prior to 2012. So it has nothing to do with the Mayan calendar, any of that goofy stuff. So don't even think that, please. Thank you. I picked that day because it's an important date in our annual solar calendar, the shortest day of the year, December 21st, 2012. Okay, so I have all of the parameters of this Earth on that sheet there, and where the North Star points to in its progression around the sky, and it precesses. It's like a top. Every 26,000 and some years, it does a complete precession of this top, which we call planet Earth. Okay, so anyway, all of the parameters of the solar system are on this sheet. And so if somebody in 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years comes back and they find civilization on Earth, and they go, these creatures lived here. These creatures, these two-eyed, bug-eyed creatures lived on this planet here, and many changes have taken place. They were wiped out by this big planetary object that came through the solar system and altered their orbit. And so we don't have any information about them or the orbit or the condition of Earth at that time. Well, this plate would give them that. They could look at this plate and they would go, aha, here's a date in their calendar. And it would give a calendar reference for all of the civilizations on planet Earth relative to 2012. Going forward, going backwards. And it's got a calendar on there where they can actually calculate the days going into the future, including leap years, that extra day we add every 4 years for leap year. Remember, February 29th only occurs every 4 years. Well, that it includes that. And going forward and going backwards. Okay, so at any rate, when it comes to talking about the longest day of the year, June 20th, I just wanted to give a little bit more information about that. Okay, here's a very interesting story, and I've been waiting for this to come out, and it actually did this past week. And it seems like the medical community or any of these communities always step all over their themselves, let's just put it that way. And here's an example. Now, there's a thing called SIDS. When I was growing up, there was no such thing as SIDS. Kids all of a sudden spontaneously dying in bed at night. Middle of the night, kids dead. What happened? Call it SIDS. Let's make up a name there, buddy. We'll call it sudden infant death syndrome. It's a syndrome they got. Your kid had a syndrome. Oh, he had? No, he got vaccinated, is what happened, and the kid died. And they don't want to talk about this, so they make up this stupid term, SIDS. Sudden infant death syndrome. When did you ever hear of somebody dying from a syndrome? Well, now you do, because that's what the term that the medical community had to come up with to cover for the fact that they're killing kids with vaccinations. So anyway, the interesting statistic is that now, because of COVID-19, since March, moms and dads have not been taking their kids to go get vaccinated because all the hospitals are off limits. Would you take your kid to a hospital where there's coronavirus and they're going to, you know, you're going to take them in for vaccination and they're going to get coronavirus? So the end result is that nobody has been vaccinating their kids for 3 months. And guess what? SIDS deaths are down to zero. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So there's no question that SIDS, this sudden infant death syndrome, is caused by kids being vaccinated. You know, they're pumping these kids with 69 shots before they're like a few years old. This is insanity. 69 shots full of mercury and aluminum and viruses. They're shooting them up with hepatitis B. That's what drug addicts and street people get from borrowed needles. Is your kid using a borrowed needle? No, his probability of getting hepatitis B is less than zero. Less than zero. I mean, unless you're taking your kid down to San Francisco to Haight-Ashbury Lane and hanging out with the street people and sharing needles. Is that what you're doing with your kid? No? Well, then he ain't going to get hepatitis B, you know. So anyway, the insanity of having all of these shots, you know, the same with measles. There's no more measles. There's no need for a measles shot if your kid is not going to become exposed to measles. And the other thing is, this is the interesting part of this. There was a court case that was resolved in favor of the people bringing the prosecution to the federal government, because the federal government is saying that everybody's supposed to be vaccinated. They went back 30 years, and not a single test has ever been done on vaccinations, not to prove that they are safe, not to prove that they even work. 30 years, not a single test on vaccinations. Oh, the doctor's going to tell you they're safe. They're safe. That's what the doctor's going to tell you. That's what the nurse is going to tell you, because that's where they're paid to tell you. It stinks. The vaccination industry, that's what it is. Because remember when you go to Target, they want you to get your flu shot? Well, the flu shot for the last 4 years has had HIV virus in it. That's right, AIDS. Yep, they're shooting you up with AIDS when you get your flu shot. So, you know, go get your flu shot, everybody. It's free. Go to Target. You walk in the door, you go up to pay your prescription, and they're going to ask you, did you get your flu shot? You know what? Because they get paid. They get paid to give you a free flu shot. No, I mean, they got this thing coming and going, but they're getting caught in their own devices, because the whole coronavirus thingy. Anyway, I'm not going to go into coronavirus tonight and talk about that. The point is that SIDS death rate has gone to zero because kids are no longer being vaccinated. Okay, my main science topic tonight, I'm going to be talking about the wind. Where does the wind come from, and why is it the only legitimate source for curing the world energy problem? And of course, that's something that I had to deal with a good better than 15 years ago, I was asked to do a study. It was a efficiency analysis of a power company up in the upper Midwest, and you might be able to guess which one that is if you are familiar with that region. But it would apply to any power company that is in existence today. In other words, how efficient is this process of creating and getting all the fuel together and then distributing the energy, and when it comes down to you turning on your light bulb or making toast in a toaster or heating your house with electric or whatever you do with electric, how efficient is this overall process? And it turns out it was really, really bad. I mean, horrifically bad, especially if you have nuclear power plants. But if you have coal or natural gas is one of the cleanest ones. And in fact, I incorporate natural gas and natural gas-related products like propane into my wing generator product assembly of options, let's put it that way, because it is a very clean source of energy. Its byproducts are water. I mean, that's the end result. And so it's pretty clean. Of course, it heat. You're taking an inert substance and heating it up and creating electricity primarily by running an engine. And so that engine creates heat. It's about 20-30% efficient. And so the rest of that goes up as heat. So it's not the best thing. But when coupled with wind energy, then all of a sudden, if the wind can provide 95% of the energy, now you're down to about 5%. You've really made a major impact on the world. You've cut down the pollution part of this thing by a good 20 times. The amount of pollution has cut to about 5% of what it used to be. Okay, so anyway. But then at the end of this study, they asked me to do an analysis of alternative energy. And so that included three-blade wind turbines and solar panels. Okay, so I do my analysis of those, and I'm going, holy cow, this stuff doesn't work. It how could anybody put this out and sell it as a product and get government subsidies to put this crap in? It doesn't work. I mean, today they're giving it away. They're trying to give it away to get the government subsidies. They're selling it at a loss. They're actually selling this stuff at a loss just to get the government subsidies. And the stupid government thinks, oh, it's green. No, it ain't green. There's nothing green about any of it. Anyway, and so that's, of course, why I developed my wing generator. Because I wanted to develop something that actually works. Hey, what a concept. Anyway, today I'm going to talk about why the wind is the best source of energy for curing the world energy problem, both on a local level, if you got a farm or a ranch or something like that, or if you're just talking about the global problem of generating electricity. I want to bring you through the logical process of understanding that wind, not solar, is the solution. Okay, so you can discount solar pretty quickly. And so I want to do that here in a couple minutes. And people that put solar on their houses are soon learning that it's not the big promised rainbow in the sky type thing. The biggest thing is, say you live in a sunny, sunny area like Phoenix, Arizona. We're not talking Madison, Wisconsin. We're not talking Toronto, Canada. We're not even talking St. Louis, Missouri. We're not talking Florida, where it's cloudy most of the time. We're talking Phoenix, Sun City, literally, Phoenix, Arizona. This is the best place for sun possibly around, at least in the United States. Maybe Yuma, down on the southern border, gets more sun. And if you look at a map, it concentrates down there. And first of all, if you look at the annual sun in these areas, It's pretty hot in the summertime, but in the wintertime, there really isn't that good of sun. It simply is not. Excuse me. And so there are maps of this that show you the average amount of sun energy, etc. If you took the amount of energy of different energy types around the world, sun, if you took the overall amount of sunlight that hits Earth in the daytime, it's pretty significant. It's more energy than wind. But we're only using a eensy, weensy, weensy piece of this. Only a very small piece of this. So you can run through the numbers. But here's the issue. Sun only is there a couple hours of the day. In fact, the industry standard says that if you have a place like Phoenix, Sun City, that because you're getting closer to the equator, the days get shorter. They're not as long as those nice long summer days up in the, say, the Canadian border. Then you have summertime, you have 14-hour days, 15-hour days, maybe 16 if you get up into Canada farther. But then the winter, it's the opposite. You have a 4 to 6 hour day, and the rest is nighttime. Not a really good plan to have solar. It's not doing much during those dark hours, and especially with the cloudy conditions. And so let's go to a place like the North Pole or the South Pole. You know, you have clouds, you have storms, and through that long nocturnal winter, there's solar doesn't do you any good at all. If it's raining, solar don't work. I have friends that have solar, and you can see on the charging meter, on the current meters, as soon as the clouds come out, bam, that thing goes to zero right now. And so, okay, sun, if you want to grid connect, okay, that gives you a little bit of a takes some bite off of your electric bill, but all these claims about how much money you're going to save are just, I'm sorry, but it's just not there. And it's to the point now where, for example, Elon Musk is giving this stuff away. He's saying, we'll install it for free. I mean, would somebody give you something for free if it really worked? No. You know, they're just trying to get it out there. They're trying to create revenue. They're trying to get people to sign up. And how are they doing that? By just giving it to you. Here, sign up, start paying us something per month. But the catch is, if you want them to come out and take it off your house, it's going to cost you $2,500. And so it's not free. It's, you're faced with a, every month that you think, oh, this thing isn't doing anything, I want to get it out of here, you got to pay them $2,500 to go take it away. So anyway, it's kind of a catch. You know, take this thing, it's for free. Start paying us $65 a month, and it'll lower your electric bill, whether it's going to lower it by $65. But remember, now you have other kinds of fees. In California, you have a solar fee. Having solar panels on your house costs you money on your electric bill. And so a lot of people don't even break even. It costs them money just to have them there. Okay, so anyway, that's I could go on and on about solar, but it don't work. Here's what I did, and it's something you do a lot of times when you do a physics problem. You're doing a physics problem about something, and the question is, you want to understand it a little better. So you take all the parameters to the extreme. So let's do this with solar panels. Take a solar panel. They're typically about 20% efficient, which means that about 20% of the sunlight that hits them is converted to electricity. Okay, then there's other losses when you charge the batteries, when the batteries become discharged, etc. There's losses if you have batteries. But let's just say, on an average case, a solar panel converts 20% of the sunlight that hits it into useful electric energy, current, whatever you want to call it. Okay, now let's look at the price of solar panels. It's right now a little bit under $2 per watt. So if you buy a 300-watt panel, just that one panel is going to run you a little under $600, you know, somewhere in the $500 range. Okay, so that's when you think, okay, well, that's not too bad. But let's do this. In my taking things to the extreme way of working a physics problem, let's pretend that you can build a solar panel that is 100% efficient. It converts 100% of the energy to electricity, and it costs one penny. Not $600, one penny. The question is, can it solve the world energy problem? And the answer is a resounding no. Why? Because to solve the world energy problem, you got to get solar panels out there in quantity sufficient so that some of the solar panels are running your electric load right now, and about seven times that number of solar panels are storing up energy so that into batteries, and then those batteries then run your load the rest of the time. 4 solar hours per day is the industry standard. That's what they figured out over the years of installing solar panels, that you get on average over the course of a year, an average year, in place like Phoenix. This ain't, like I say, Toronto or Madison, Wisconsin. We're talking Sun City, Phoenix. You're getting 4 solar hours a day. Okay, so now there's inefficiencies to store the charge in the batteries. That is a percentage loss. And then when you recover this charge out of the batteries and use it, there's a loss. And so you're losing quite a bit of energy just on those conversions. So now you have to put more solar panels out there to make up for the inefficiency and loss. And it becomes like what's known as the rocket problem. Let's say you build a big rocket, okay, and you put your payload up on the top, your astronauts and all their crap, and put it on the nose of your rocket, and you shoot it off into space. In the next rocket, you go, I want to get twice as big. I want to send up twice as many astronauts. I want to send up twice as much stuff for them, food and, you know, and experiments and everything else. So the question is, if you're going to build another big rocket, would you just build a rocket that's twice as big? Well, the answer is no, because now you have to add more fuel, and the extra fuel becomes payload, because now you got to have a much bigger engine to lift this thing and much bigger superstructure and everything else. So if you built a rocket twice as big, you're not going to get twice as much payload. You're going to get a lot less than twice as much payload. And it's the same thing with solar panels. Once you start adding in all the inefficiencies, hey, because you have to store the energy, then you have a problem, because now you have to build this massive solar array where you got to collect all your energy during a certain short amount of time and then store it all up and then run it back from the battery. So one of the things I did with the wing generator is one of my requirements was that I don't want to use batteries as backup. I want this thing efficient enough from low to high wind speeds that you don't really need batteries to run it. It's going to run pretty much 24/7, and even on low wind, it can pick up and produce a significant amount of energy. And of course, if there's really low wind, then you do have to store up some energy. But I'll talk about that solution if I have time at the end of the show, how that works. So the end result is that sun ain't going to work. Okay? So 15 years ago, I said sun, solar, is not going to solve the world energy problem. It's a nice thought. You can get a lot of people to buy into it, put it on their house. They'll feel green. They'll really feel green. That's a good talking point at lunch at work. I just got solar panels. Oh boy, you're green. You're a really ecological guy. Except the only problem is, if they really look at it, it's not really doing much. Okay, and there's other problems, like if all of a sudden the power company's running and there's no input due to solar, and all of a sudden the sun comes out if it's a rainy day, then all of a sudden, you know what the central power company's going to do? They're going to shut off all those solar panels. There was a family in California they put on solar panels, and they were expecting all of this big savings from their solar panels. And after 6 months, they're looking at their electric bill, and there's no savings. So they called up the electric company, and they said, what's going on? We put these solar panels on. We're expecting big savings. And the electric company said, yeah, we've never turned them on. Yep, that's the way it works. So anyway, and, you know, so I could go on and on. But the end result is, put it in a nutshell, make it simple. Solar is not going to solve the world energy problem ever, 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 period. Okay, so that leaves wind. Will wind solve the energy problem of the world? Well, if you use three-blade wind turbines, they certainly won't. Let me just give you a little example here. Of the 100,000-plus three-blade wind turbines that have been installed in the country, in the U.S. alone, and this is not counting all the other countries, they're figuring this out on their own, that these things don't work. Okay, the nameplate, which is the rated value of the wind turbine, if you take that and you multiply it times 100,000, you come up with about half the amount of power electrically that we use in the United States today. So if they worked, 50% of our electrical energy should be coming from the wind. Well, is that happening? No, no, not at all. We're not even getting 1%. 1.7% of the energy in the United States comes from wind. And this is on a worldwide basis. I have some charts that show this. These are numbers that are not my numbers. They're numbers that are procured from studies. And I don't even think these are accurate. I think it's far less. But at any rate, the wind just blows right through these. Those three little sticks out there, do you think the wind really hits those things and does something? That's ridiculous. Okay, so at any rate, I'm not going to talk about the wind generator today. I'm just going to talk about the wind. And I'm going to talk about the wind as an energy source in general. First of all, the wind is a renewable energy source. If you use some of the wind, let's compare it to coal. There's a finite amount of coal or on planet Earth or natural gas, whatever you're burning in a regular power plant. There's a certain amount of it, and if you use some of it, you've used up that much, and it takes away from the total amount of coal that's there. Okay? And of course, we're getting the easy coal now and the clean coal. That's not going to last forever. But the point is that wind is different. If you use some wind energy, that doesn't mean that tomorrow there's going to be less wind. No, the wind, and let's be clear also, the standard story in science for where wind comes from, what they're saying is it's the sunlight that hits Earth and that comes up and it heats the air and that makes the wind blow. That's stupid. What happens in the nighttime? Does the wind stop? No. Gee, you know, I just cannot stand how bad science is today. It's just so ridiculously bad. But that's what they'll tell you. They'll tell you hurricanes are made from, you know, formed from salty water. That's just absurd. That's absurd. These people are a bunch of morons. PhDs piled higher and deeper. I just can't stand it. Anyway, back to wind. Sorry for the rant there. Some of these things just drive me crazy. But anyway, wind is caused by the electrical conditions in the solar system. We are part of a big electrical circuit in the solar system. We're discharging the solar capacitor just like comets, and that is the biggest driving force of wind. I give this example in my weather book. That's the first thing I start with. I say if sunlight were the only cause of weather on Earth, we would have very bland weather. We would not have clouds. We wouldn't have tornadoes or hurricanes or cyclones of any kind. Water spouts, none of that would exist with sunlight alone. We would have kind of a haze in the daytime. There would be no wind. And then when Earth went around to nighttime, it would be dead calm. That's what you would get if sunlight were the only source of energy on planet Earth. Figure it out. you know, and so anyway, the real source of wind energy is the electrical currents that pass through the solar system. And by the way, back a long time ago, 20 years ago or more, I was working on Tesla technology for Tesla towers to extract energy from the vertical electric field from the ionosphere, like Tesla was actually doing. And I decided it was a bad idea, especially on a big scale. The scale of energy that we need today, it would be a super, super bad idea. It would be killing birds. It'd be an environmental disaster, having these amazingly huge electrical currents coming down from the ionosphere. And besides, when a solar storm came rolling along, you couldn't shut this baby off. And then you would have no, and if you did, you wouldn't have any electricity. So Tesla towers per se are not good plans for providing electricity on a big scale. A nice idea, but it doesn't work. There are too many practical issues with not doing it. So I scrapped it and said, okay, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm going to go with the wind, which is another source of electrical energy. It's a result of electrical current sheets in the solar system that Earth is connected to. And these are huge, huge, immense amounts of power. And so when you tap into the wind, you're not using up a resource. You're just kind of like putting a paddle wheel out in a river that's going by. And that river, if it rains up in the mountains, that river keeps going and it's going to keep going. Paddle wheels were one of the best sources of energy. In fact, that's the principle of the very early electric dams. They'd put a paddle wheel in a river and create electricity. Okay, so at any rate, getting back to the wind. So the wind is a renewable energy source. That's my point. The wind is a renewable energy source that is there every day. And if you use some of it, it's not going to take away from the amount that's going to be there tomorrow. So wind is a great energy source. It is there rain or shine, day or night, any climate, north to south pole. And the wind is, if you go up to a good windy spot, we know where the wind is. There are maps that show the wind locations, and you find today a lot of the three-blade wind turbines are occupying these places. Okay, so let's take a little bit closer look at some of these that I just named off. Wind is the most renewable energy source, and it's 24/7, middle of the night, the wind's blowing. Middle of the day, the wind's blowing. You know, there's many times, especially during sunrise and sunset, are times when the wind will calm down and then it'll pick up afterwards again. And if you're in a place like, say, a lake or a ridge or something like that, typically you have much better wind than the average person. And so then you get to the point of, well, is it good in a very specific spot? And here is what I've discovered, that the average, this is a very important point, and this is actually directed to people like, for example, Trump says, hey, honey, if the wind's not blowing, we can't watch TV tonight. And it's true. With the three-blade wind turbines, which don't work, you're not going to watch TV ever, let alone tonight. But anyway, here's what I discovered. If you take the time average of wind energy across a large area like the United States, or say England, or a big land area, you know, if you take the time average wind energy, it's a constant. So if it's, and this is another way of saying it, if it's not blowing in one place, it's blowing in another place. And if it's not blowing there, it's blowing in another place. And so the way you set this up in terms of providing the entire country with wind energy electricity is that you build up in the windy spots where we know the wind blows just constantly. I've been in places, there's a place I like. It's down in the American Southwest. It's when I went down to the Laughlin to give a talk. at Laughlin, Nevada, at the UFO Congress. It's on one of my videos that you can purchase. And there's a place down there where it's a valley. It's in Nevada. And they sell all kinds of kites and wind-related things, little whirligig things and all kinds of wind stuff. Because the wind just blows, it just rips through there all of the time. All of the time. This is, I mean, wind capital of the world. And there are a lot of places like this. Eagles Pass, and I mean, out up and down all of the coastlines and the Great Lakes. A lot of places out in the middle of New Mexico and Arizona and Texas and Oklahoma. The Great Lakes up that covers a big population area along the northeast up there. And then down the eastern coast and the Carolinas, wind, Florida, wind. You know, this joker governor in Florida wants to put 33 million solar panels in Florida. Hey, I got a news for you, buddy. Do you live there? Do you ever see a cloud in Florida? By 10 in the morning, it's cloudy. You know, maybe he only, I don't know, the guy's a moron. You don't put solar panels where there's clouds. It's not going to work. But that's not what it's about. It's about somebody getting paid under the table. That's what that's all about. Nobody would do it for a engineering solution. Somebody's getting kickbacks, big time. Okay, so at any rate, the wind is, if you want wind, go to Florida. We have wind, very good wind, around the entire United States. And so by distributing the big ones, these are the big wing generators, by the way, that will replace nuclear and coal power plants. You distribute it and you build it out to about 150%. And then what happens is you run it around 95% of the energy from the country. The base load comes from wind. And now the big wing generators are such that you can control the energy output based on the wind. If there's too much wind, then you can scale them back. If there's not enough wind, you're built at 150%, you're still going to be able to meet that 90% criteria. Okay, and then the other 5 to 10% is done with natural gas. And there's a very good reason for doing that. You do that because that provides the voltage, it sets the voltage and the frequency, and you can do that with machines. So that's the other 5% or 10% of the power. So you've just replaced about 95% of our power, plus we're going to double the requirement for electricity in the next 10 years because of electric automobiles, electric transportation, electric tractors, electric trains, electric cross-country high-velocity transit systems, etc. All electric. I think one of the high-speed rail systems just opened up cross-country. This is the future, but this is all going to take more electricity, and the central power companies have no plan to build up more capacity, either nuclear or coal or any other form. Natural gas is easy to install, but still they're not going to be installing this, nor are they going to install the infrastructure. So what's the end result? The end result is the wing generator. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. There's no question about it. Okay, so getting back to the idea that the average energy on the planet or in a big country like the United States is a constant. So yes, honey, you can watch TV tonight with the JMCC wing generator running. If you're depending on three-blade wind turbines, no, honey. If there ain't no wind, you ain't going to watch TV. Simple as that. Okay, so at any rate, let's go back to some of these conditions. Rain or shine, the wind's blowing. Night or day, the wind's blowing. Any climate, the wind's blowing. North Pole to South Pole, it's the wind is blowing. You know, winter or summer, the wind is blowing. Now, go through that same list for solar. Rain or shine? Nope. Day or night? Nope. Any climate? Nope. North and South Pole? Nope. Average wind? That doesn't count because they're using sunlight. But winter or summer? Nope. Sun and solar don't fit any of those. Solar solar doesn't fit any of those. Excuse my emphasis there. Any of those. Solar doesn't work. So we also have wind maps that show us where the wind is blowing. And as I say, once you get up to the big wing generators, they will be adjustable so that they will put out a constant amount of power. Okay, so at any rate, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit here. I'm not sure if it's just summertime. I guess this actually happens as we head into narrowing down on the 4th of July here and people off on vacations, you know, especially with coronavirus and people finally getting out and about, etc. But my radio show, this is a commercial-free radio show, and basically what I depend on is selling the water filters and my latest book and other items there and to cover expenses here. So, you know, as you're traveling around on your summer vacation or whatever you're doing, mention to people that say, hey, do you have a water filter? No. Go order from this McCanny guy. And anyway, just a little free advertisement there. Try and keep the promotion down on this show. But typically what happens is in the summertime, things slow down. And then in the fall, things pick up again. And oddly enough, Christmas time, the pre-Christmas shopping time is usually pretty slow because everybody's out buying other stuff and Christmas presents, not water filters, but then it picks up after the first of the year. That's kind of the general cycle. So things are a little bit slow right now. So like I say, when you're out and about meeting people and, mention that in terms of water filters, that I just happen to sell the best ones on the planet and for the best prices. Okay, well, enough of that. And remember the Patreon channel, some more people are joining that. I'm not putting a lot of time into promotion of that, which I'm going to start doing. I'm going to try and start promoting my Patreon channel as a way of broadening my base, getting my information out, and also it's a nice little bit of extra revenue there to keep the all of the things going here that have to keep moving. As you know, I pay for my own airtime, etc. Okay, enough of that kind of selfless promotion there, as they call it. At any rate, things are going good, and I hope things are going good for you out there. All the craziness in the country, I suggest, take care of yourself. And if you, just get out, start living your life. And maybe this coronavirus thing should have been a good lesson for all of us on the direction we should be going in our lives. So anyway, this is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. Remember my webpage, jmccsci.com. And we are at the crossroads. Good night.